impressions of Patch 5.3, The Rising 2020, and Yo-Kai Watch Returns. All this and more in this issue of the Carbuncle Chronicle. Huzzah, adventurers, and welcome back once more to the Carbuncle Chronicle, your podcast for everything awesome in Final Fantasy XIV. I'm Basil, and I play Alalafel, named 4K Ritus K, who's a summoner who is really happy to have his dwarf tank.
I'm Anna, I play Alalafel dancer on Leviathan named Cormier Ritus K, and I really love the new German outfit. I really love it.
I'm Dylan. I play an Elizan white mage named Aldrich Greywind, and I don't have anything interesting to say here.
Well, that's okay. So, it's been a minute since we podcast about 14, but a lot has happened in the few weeks that we have been playing and not recording about it. Like I mentioned in the intro, patch 5.3 is here, full of things to do, and we still have more things upcoming on the horizon. But very recently, Yoshida, our wonderful lord and savior of things of Final Fantasy XIV, did a post about Skybuilder rankings and achievements, and also additional housing.
Yep, for Skybuilder rankings, he waited until he got some feedback from those of us that did it the first time, and even, I think, people that didn't do it yet. And they finally came to the conclusion they will have new achievements and have sort of like the level 1, level 2, level 3 type achievement, and that, you know, we've completed the first step of the Ishgard restoration and then moved on to the next step. And so for each step, they will have achievements like that. However, the ranking titles will not change, which I am personally a fan of, because for those of us that did it the first time and got a ranking title, it's great. We enjoyed it. We're glad to have it. We really don't want to do it again. So it's nice that now we can give that to other people to get those titles. And I think that's a good way to do it. And in that same post that he made, we are getting more housing! Yay! Sort of. There will be 24 new wards. It is 6 wards per zone: Mist, Goblet, Lavender Beds, and Shiragane. And what it is, it's not necessarily 6 wards, but it's 3 divisions and then 3 subdivisions. Technically, it's 24 new wards. I believe they said 720 new plots. And they're doing something that before they usually open it for free companies to get housing first, and then private people can get houses. But this time, when they open, both free company and private estates will immediately be available for purchase. This will make things harder to get a house if you haven't already gotten one. Unfortunately, it's housing savage. That's what we call it. You gotta be prepared to not win what you want. And it sucks. I know people have, you know, suggested all kinds of different ways to do this. I don't know of any good ways, but this is how we have it. If you want a house and haven't gotten one for yourself or your free company, I would suggest the night before maintenance, log out at the very entrance of the place you want to go, and then you can go through and go to the new ward and go from there. It's, yeah.
Because sadly, a lot of this is just also whims of when you can actually get a decent place in queue. If you do, everyone's logging in at the exact same moment, so who knows what order you're going to get filtered into. And frankly, that is everything.
I will say, when they open up new wards like this, that's when we got lucky and got our free company house. We went to the very bottom of the list when they were new, because we knew people would be going for the top, like, you know, the very first ones that were new. We went to the bottom of the list. I got into the game. I got into that ward, and we got our mansion for our free company. And we also ended up, a lot of our FC members got new houses that time. So it just depends. I know we have, what, 20 million players now? Was that? I don't remember if that was the number. Yes,
20 million currently active players.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot more players than when we were buying houses the first time around. But, you know, there's always, just try and stay positive if you want a house. Like I said, we went to the very bottom of the list. Go to the very bottom of the list. Heck, even go to the subdivision. You know, that probably gives you a better shot. Even go maybe in the middle of the list. And that might give you a better shot, because most people are going to go for the very first. So, but if you want a house, good luck. Start saving up the gil now, and we'll see what happens.
And I should also mention that this is not remotely Ishgard stuff either. We haven't even gotten there yet, and that's where all the real blood's going to get spilt.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't even know when, because, you know, we have the Ishgard restoration happening. We don't, I assume the housing will probably be available in 6.0. I assume we'll be restoring Ishgard through the rest of this expansion. 6.0 is when we'll finally have the housing. So that'll be a whole new bloodbath when the expansion comes out.
I'm actually kind of wondering, it may be like the patch right before 6.0. Like, okay, some sort of patch 5.4, 5.5, 5.5 or something. You know, right before 6.0. Because you don't want to start a brand new expansion and then everything's crashing and burning because everyone's trying to get housing before they even start whatever the new expansion is.
Right. And see, I could see them doing sort of the opposite of what you just said in doing it, you know, the housing maybe in 6.1 or 6.05, like a few weeks after the expansion does hit. I could see that happening as well.
Can you only have one private house, or can you have multiple?
Yes. So, each account, you can have a private house, and you can have a free company house. Many people have found ways around this. This is, and that is one of the biggest problems with housing, is there are people who have found a way to have multiple, like, free company houses. Basically, they just have different free companies under the same name, so whole free companies can own a ward. It's not perfect, but yeah, technically, yes, one character, I believe, can own two houses under a free company and under their private.
I think now it's also per account, per server. It used to be such that, you know, for every character you made, each character could have a free company house and their own personal house. I believe many patches ago they put a restriction where it's now just per one account per server, because some people were having like 10 characters and each character had their own FC and own personal house. Yeah. And so they would, one person would own like half a ward.
Oh man. That didn't make the competition for housing any easier.
Sure. And I'm pretty positive all this housing stuff also lives on their own servers, because they also mentioned that just eking out these more plots that they could, they couldn't actually really dig in and set up more housing because they physically cannot get to their servers to figure out how well they can maximize what they can do. Due to the whole, right, you know, COVID hellscape we live in now.
Yeah. So, the reason I ask, though, was it seems like when Ishgard comes up, that's going to, like, you're going to see a lot of people migrate there. And so, that'll free up a lot of housing elsewhere.
Right. And honestly, this could free up housing elsewhere as well, because I know the last time they opened up wards, people would move to different housing places, because I know a lot of people moved from the Goblet to the Mist or from any of them to Shirogane because that's where they really wanted their house. I believe that's when I moved my house from Shirogane to the Mist so I could be in the same ward as our FC house. So that's the other thing is if you want housing, when these new houses pop up, start looking in former wards because some people may be moving houses. And that's a great thing, but that also does bring up the whole, you know, people could be moving houses and instead of just buying a new one. And it's complicated. And that's one thing I don't like now is when new houses get when houses get demolished, there's a timer for people to buy the house. But if you are just relocating your house, you can immediately do it.
Right. So it immediately comes open and it's immediately available for purchase.
Right. So, but when these come up, they will all be immediately available for purchase. But if people are relocating their house, then those plots are going to be set to the timer. So either someone can move in there automatically by relocating, or you're going to have a lot of people crowding around those constantly waiting, like clicking on it to wait for the timer. And that could take 24 hours.
Yeah, I remember when I went to buy my house, coming in, and I didn't realize there was that timer, and that was confusing at first, and it definitely makes the hunt a little more complicated, because once you find the house, now you have to make sure you come back before someone else gets it, before it comes open.
I think the worst was when they had housing go up on Christmas Day, and they didn't tell us what time it was going up, so Basil and I took, like, we didn't sleep, like, from Christmas Eve, all Christmas Day. We would take, like, on the hour, we would check, and then we would take a nap, and then we would wake up on the hour and check. He actually ended up getting a house, but I didn't that time.
Yeah, that was a thing. I remember that now going, waking up, going, oh, God, crap, oh, shoot, the house is there. Click, Anna, get up, click. Oh, God, I got it, Anna, wake up, oh, God, it's gone.
I missed it by like a second. It was so bad.
So, housing is a thing that exists, and we'll get more housing in the future. But today, you can play patch 5.3. It's here. It's been here for a few weeks. Now, I don't want to get too spoilery talky if we can help it, but we can say that this patch had a lot of storyline to it because it had to complete the Shadowbringer story arc and begin sowing the seeds for the next expansion story arc. Not that we know what the next expansion is yet, but we know one's coming.
It was so good. It was such a good way to end. And they have been on point this expansion with the story. It's not disappointed at all. And they had a lot to live up to with this ending because there was a lot that the player base wanted from it, and I feel like we got it. I feel like we got everything we could have wanted.
Yeah, I feel like it resolved kind of the overarching issue of Shadowbringers really well. It wasn't like, there weren't like any crazy twists, but
I will say this patch has now brought one of my favorite cutscenes into the mix. Like, Wanderer's Palace probably had cutscenes of all time. This one gave me one to almost top that in the new trial, and I loved it. And it's hard not to go into spoilers for it, because the spoilers were some of the best parts. But I feel like, again, we got a great instance out of this patch. I love the instance. And the dungeon, the 0.3 patch has always been, you know, it's wrapping up the story, but it also wants to remind you of how far you've come. And we got that with the Gimlet Dark and Stormblood. You had all of your allies come and help you out during the fight. It was great. It's so great to see all these people that you had met along your journey. And this one didn't disappoint. We got that a couple of times with the instance and with the dungeon. And I thought that it was just so well done. I really enjoyed it.
So with Shadowbringers, it was mostly, I don't say mostly written, I mean, it's Final Fantasy XIV is very much one of those things where, you know, it takes a village. For Final Fantasy XIV, I feel it's more like it takes a nation to create. but Natsuko Ishikawa, she was one of the main writers behind, like, for example, the Dark Knight job quest series and the Asim Step quest series for that area in Stormblood. And she was the lead writer for Shadowbringers. And she knocks it out of the park every time. If you ask anyone what the best set of job quests are, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say Dark Knight first, and then probably Scholar second.
To Vetter Dragoon. Dragoon has a really good story.
But almost everyone I've talked to will always say, who's played all of them, will always say Dark Knight first.
Yeah, Dark Knight has the best.
It essentially pulls off this amazing thing of, you're more or less playing through the plot of Persona game, although you may not realize it at first, but you are. And it might be even better than some of the more recent Persona games. I don't want to really, you know, cast my banner into the sand or anything, but I think I just did. So what I'm saying is that Shadowbringers had probably the best writer they could have picked to tell the story that they did. And it still comes through with the ending. It also does things that, if you look back, even back to ARR, and even before, there are things that they had put into place, clearly things that they could grab onto to tell a storyline in the future with, and interlink things. It feels very much, they left, you know, the whole Abrams, you know, mystery boxes concept, only, unlike JJ, they actually pulled it off.
Yeah, I mean, that's like I was telling you the other day. I noticed something about my character that I just, it was a throwaway thing when I was making my character, and now it means so much more to me. And this is the guardian you get to pick when you're creating your character. I unintentionally picked the correct one.
Not that anyone's wrong, it's just that there are links that you can place with things you learn in the patch storyline that interlink to other things that deal with the history of the world. What could things mean? It answers a lot of questions and raises a few more, but in those ways that get you excited to talk about lore. So good on the team over there at Square Enix. You put together an awesome, awesome, you know, ending point for the Shadowbringers story arc. And also, we clearly are seeing where they're at least thematically taking us into whatever the next expansion is going to be. And I'm excited. I actually was not the biggest fan of one of the main villains of Stormblood, but they're doing things with characters that I was not big fans of that I might become a fan of in this expansion, depending on how things go. And I did not think that was possible. So here's hoping.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, in Stormblood, when we first met Solas, I hated that character. I was like, oh my God, please just get rid of him. But then him being, you know, one of the main characters of this expansion, I was like, holy shit. He is my favorite NPC.
Yep. So, speaking of NPCs, we also got to deal with 2P and all other sorts of Ps with the Puppet's Bunker, the latest raid series in the Yorha Dark Apocalypse raid series that's being guest-directed by everyone's favorite guy, Yoko Taro. Have you a chance to play this raid series yet, Dylan?
No, I've not started it.
Did you ever play the first set yet? Have you played
I haven't done any of the Yorha, and I don't know why. Like, I don't even know if I have the first one. I've just not really sought it out. I mean, part of the reason is I've not really played any Yoko Taro games, so I don't, like, it doesn't have that draw for me of like, oh, I gotta see what he's doing here.
I'm in the same boat. I've never played any either, but I did watch Basil play Nier before this patch came out, so I was looking forward to him going through this and telling me what things were.
Right.
And I only played Nier Automata after I played the first raid.
Copy Factory, yeah.
And the playing that first raid is what really sold me on, oh, right, I really need to go back and play that Nier game. I really need to. So I'm pretty positive that raid series did its job, that it made me go, oh, right, I need to go buy that video game. I need to give Square Enix more money.
Right.
Which you didn't, because Tobias bought it for you.
Well, that was the quality of my grift, Anna.
Someone gave Square Enix money, and that was the goal.
And Lord knows, with that new mountain outfit, we've given Square Enix plenty of cash already.
Lord.
$36 for a mount, even though it's a really cool mount. Ugh.
Yeah, but it's such a cool mount. And the outfit is so good. But yeah, no, Puppets Bunker, it was hard. Like, doing it that first day, we were dying left and right, trying to figure out those mechanics. It was so much fun. And I it's actually not as bad now. Like, now that people have done it, they're like, oh, it's not that bad, but it's still, like, it's a fun 24 man.
I think that may be one of the reasons that I haven't done it, is any of the sort of in-game instances. My initial reaction is like, oh no, this is going to be something else I have to learn. This is potentially going to be tough. I'm going to be that guy
until I figure it out.
Remember, you're in a group of 24 that guys. It's fine. Everyone is that guy in that raid for the first time they're playing it. And it's okay. I think, honestly, that's part of the reason why they had Yoko Taro guest direct, because he could joke about how everyone's dying all the time. So now everyone's like, oh, Yoko Taro, you're such a kidder. Oh, wait, you just did this thing. All right, well, that's disconcerting.
I think that was one of my favorite parts. Like, the first day running it, everybody's like, oh my god, this is, oh my god. And I'm like, yeah, and just remember, he wanted it harder.
But I really don't want you to think, oh god, it's so hard, Dylan, I don't want to play it. No, it's fun.
It really isn't.
And it's not that bad. Not really. Now, granted, Anne and I have been doing the latest Savage tiers lately. So we're honestly playing the harder stuff that's harder than Nier. But I would also say that I think it's about as equivalent and maybe a little bit easier than the Evil East Raid series.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I agree.
If you've gotten through Evil East, you can get through Nier. It's fine.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't do a whole lot of the Evil East raids either, kind of for the same reason. Because I remember I was still catching up when everyone was talking about Rabanastra and some of the other places and talking about how difficult they were. I was just like, you know, that's going to be rough, especially with 24 people as opposed to, like, 4 or 8.
Honestly, you'll go in there, you know, you see it. Once you see it, you're like, oh, okay, I get it now. And it's not that bad. It really isn't.
Okay. I'll have to look for that one. I haven't been playing as much recently, but next time I get in, I need to look for that, I guess.
Yeah. And then if you want, just holler at us and we'll come help you out.
Okay.
And honestly, you've got plenty of time. 14 is not going anywhere. There's at least 3 or 4 months before we get another major patch like this. And even then, that's just going to introduce the next, you know, 8-man series, not the next Nier Raid series. So you've got plenty of time to dip your toes whenever you're feeling comfortable with it.
Exactly.
Speaking of things that people may or may not be comfortable with, The Sorrow of Whirlt.
Whirlit.
Whirlit. Okay, that's how you say it. Okay, this is where the one time I will spoil things. Look, y'all get a chance to get to pilot your own ultimate weapon reconstructed by Cid and fight the Sapphire weapon in your own little duty, and it's awesome.
It insulted me. I was so insulted. Like, so, I did it before Basil did, and so I went in, And I'm like, okay, I understand this. This is fine. Well, I messed up and I died. So when you go back to do it again, it's like, okay, do you want to do it on normal, easy, or very easy? And I was like, that's, we're doing it on normal. That's, jeez.
I have my dignity.
Well, I'm wondering if this is a new thing, because we were talking to some other folks, and they were doing other duties to catch back up, and they had died during one of the duties, and they got that same screen.
Well, it was during the solo instance of the story. So it was, it's just this patch that they did it for both of those. I'm like, so yeah, it may be a new thing that they're doing, which is fine, but seeing it your first time was just like, really?
It's functionally the same thing as them constantly just giving you more and more echo power to push you through whatever solo instance you're doing. Only now you actually get to see, like, what options you have for it.
Right. Well, see, that's like, yeah, before it's like, oh, awesome, we've got the echo. Now you're aware that, oh, they're making it so we're, yeah, okay, we're just bad.
I remember one instance, one job quest. I forget, I think it might have been one of the thief or ninja quests, where I was having to go through an instance in Limsa, and just for whatever reason, I just could not get through it. I went through it at least, I think it was my 10th try, that it finally more or less just handed it to me. So I kind of wouldn't mind if I really had a real bad experience with something. I'd be like, nope, nope, very easy, just get me on through. It's fine. I don't have dignity. It's okay.
I will say, I've got the Ruby Weapon quest, and I have not run it for that exact reason, because it's like, oh, this sounds like a trial that's going to be rough. Not sure I want to be that guy.
No, it's Dylan.
Not sure
it's
I
want to
learn mechanics.
It's fine, because that trial is not the extreme version. It's just the hard version. And even hard doesn't mean anything now. That's just what they call all of them at this point.
Power creep.
Yeah, pretty much. It's Super Saiyan 1, and then later on you can do it as Super Saiyan 3. It's fine. It's got some really cool storyline bits to it. And in this part of Wurlit, not only do you get to fight in your Gundam, which is awesome, you get to use a beam saber and fight another robot and fire off beam cannons. It's awesome. And then later on, after you beat it, you get more cutscenes, and they actually like really went out of their way with cutscenes for this. And they also gave you a little mini like town section to talk to NPCs that's like way more well rendered than it has any right to be.
And there's an NPC there to do Triple Triad. I missed the first time, so make sure you go do that if you're a Triple Triad fan.
And there's a lot of big storyline bits. You learn more things about various characters in the storyline. It's super cool. So you should go do it. And also, one of the best versions of the Ultra Weapon theme is just there for you to listen to, Dylan, and you haven't heard it yet.
Okay.
Apparently, if I remember the story correctly, Soken had talked about trying to figure something out, and someone had mentioned the Primals, his rock band. And he went, oh man, what if I took the Ultra Weapon theme and just had my band do it? Oh man, that'd be so cool. Apparently they spent, literally, they were supposed to record several songs, and they instead spent their entire day's worth of studio's time and space just perfecting the Ultra Weapon theme as the Primals. Because Soken was so into it.
And you know they were all excited about it, too.
So, no, it's good stuff. And, yeah, like, it's also one of those series that I kind of wish, you know, our mutual friend, you know, greatest living interviewer of all time, John Robbins, would play 14. Because I think he would love it.
It's the most Evangelion thing ever.
Yeah, I feel like piloting giant robots definitely is a...
It got Kevin back.
Yeah, like it's kind of the equivalent of what the Evil East raids would have been for him last patch. It's like the thing that would convince him.
So yep. it is really, really, really cool. And if you're into crafting, we now have the Dwarf Beast Tribe, which is kind of weird because dwarves are just first Lalafels, which now means I'm playing a Beast Tribe, even though I'm not. Essentially, the concept of quote-unquote a Beast Tribe is in fact a useless term. But whatever, I got to talk to dwarves, got to pal around with them, and they built me a tank. So, whatevs.
The tank is really cool. And I love how it doesn't scale. So, for a Lalafell, it's the perfect size. You can go in it. Like, you sit in it. You command it to shoot laser beams. And then when you fly, you go in it and the top comes down. But with other characters, like, I know, I believe Makote can sit in it okay. But the bigger the character you get, like, I know Hrothgar and Rogan, they just sit on top of it. They can't even go in it. And so it's really neat to see other races in that tank. And it is a cool mount. And I'm actually really enjoying the story for the Beast Tribe, but like for the dwarves. And it's really fun. It's definitely helping me get things for my gear as a crafter. I do find it funny you have the little frog automations rolling around with barrels. And if you read the little text from the NPCs, you see that they're just moving booze everywhere.
Now that I think about it, I have seen that tank in memes and stuff. And it didn't occur to me like that was from the Dwarf Tribe quests.
Yeah, like when they first started introducing that as the Beast Tribe or one of the Beast Tribes for this expansion, you saw them. There was in the little settlement for the dwarves, there are these designs, and it's for the tank. So we knew very early on that was going to be the mount, and it definitely delivered on our expectations and then some. And the top of it, when it comes down, if you've gotten the frog automation mount from the Formidable fate in Kaluzhia, by completing that fate, you get tokens, and you can either get the frog automation minion or you can get a mount. And the top of the tank is the top of the frog head. So you see the little frog eyes and things on top of it when it's closed.
Like if you have the mount?
No, I mean, you don't have to have the frog. If you don't have to have, you don't have to have either of them. I'm just saying that is where that design comes from.
So, yeah, like if you ever go to like the dwarf towns, I forget what they're called. One's like Torma, one's something else. But they have these little automaton frog-looking robots that are doing a thing. And they all have the same sort of frog head. And it's clearly, not only are those the things that you interact with and you can do a fate to get your own frog little mecha mount, but it's the same design they're using for this tank.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't even know that was there. Like, that's not... Is that connected to the Beast Tribe, or is that just in general?
It's just in general. Like, that's just one of their thematic looks they have to their stuff. And I really enjoy the storyline of the dwarf thing, because you've in the first, up there in northern Kaluzhia, up high, you've got the two towns, and they're very much the Montagues and the Capulets, where there are two rival dwarf towns, even though they all revere the same OG dwarf Awesome Doom Watt, who is actually a reference to Secret of Mana's Watt, who has, like, you know, the blue armor and the brown beard. Like, it's a straight-up Secret of Mana reference, because this game is a showcase for all things, frankly, at this point, Square Enix.
I was about to say, isn't that the second Secret of Mana reference this expansion? Because wasn't there one in the Katana Rivalry with the birds?
Yes, like, you see this giant tree, and if you look at the tree at the right time, they actually have, like, the red or pink flamingos or birds that would fly in the opening screen for Secret of Mana when you boot up the game.
Oh, man. That takes me back.
So they even brought back Watt, who was the awesome blacksmith you deal with in Secret of Mana. And he is now this, you know, because especially the first is a full of bunch of older Final Fantasy references, because they have things like elves and dwarves. And not just Elizin and Lalafell. And so they make sure that all the dwarves in, you know, in the first, they're actually elf elves, but they're all wearing their helmets, and their helmets just naturally create the dark face with the yellow eyes that, you know, you would get, you know, the VV look.
And if you're a Lalafell playing through Shadowbringers and you're not, because you're not wearing one, they question you a lot.
So I really, especially playing a Lalafell, it is really kind of fun to be running around with all these dwarves because I'm the same size as them. And so it really feels like I'm honestly just pounding around with other like people. It's very much the same feeling I get when I happen to run into an all Lalafell like dungeon run.
Right.
It is good stuff. So, Anna, I know that you've been playing on an alt on another server. Have you been able to enjoy anything plus side of this whole new AR revamp, or are you already past all that?
I've already passed AR, but the flying. The flying has definitely been a godsend. And I actually just jump potioned up to Shadowbringers, but I can't do it. Like, I'm not 60 on my dancer, so I have to do all the Stormblood side quests to get there. But no, the biggest thing, because I was already past everything, so I never got the teleportation tickets to the Waking Sands. But I still had to go to the Waking Sands for a couple of things when the patch dropped. So being able to fly there, I still forget on this character, on my main, I'll still start running to other places or on my mount, just going. And then I'll like jump over something and start flying and go, oh, wait. So it's definitely been very helpful with the flying, especially.
I have really enjoyed going through all the old zones. I think I've now flown through all of the... Today, I was wrapping up some crafting quests. Because, silly me, I thought you got all your abilities now just automatically. No. There's like one or two abilities that's actually still obtained through the Heavensward crafting quests. So I am now going back and doing all of them. And one of them was sending me through Kurthus, through whichever Kurthus it was that was not part of Heavensward. I forget, was it Western?
Dragonhead. No, Central. Western is Heavensward. Central Kurthus was.
Central Kurthus, yeah. And I realized, wait a minute, I can just fly there. I remember one time in Mordona where we're doing stuff and you had to go meet someone during the storyline. And I were in the same spot. And she heard me go, wait, I remember, I can fly!
That's really good in Mordona, because if you have quests that take you into one of the buildings in the back, there's stairs and, you know, like, it's really easy to get lost. And with flying, it's just like, okay, I'm up here.
That is exactly what I did.
Yeah.
That's what it was. You got it in one, Dylan.
Okay.
But for those who have been playing 14 newly, I'm sure that will be really helpful. And for those of us who've been playing 14 for a while, flying has been just the best thing ever. But if you've played 14 for a while, you know that we are now currently going through the event that they call The Rising. It is going on right now as you're listening to this, if you download this on, you know, when we actually put it out. But it's coming. It's going from the 27th of August to September 14th. So, theoretically, if you're listening to this as it's coming out, you still have a good week and change to go do this event. It starts in Uldah, and it's just a cute little story that gives you some neat little items. The Rising Festival is the big thing of them celebrating. Boy, 1.0 was a pile of trash, huh? Sure glad this is a good video game, huh, now, huh? Yeah. Yay us for not being crap.
It really is. And it's great, because if you go to the... I know Limsa... I'm sure it's all three of the city-states. When you zone into them, you can hear Answers, which is the main theme for Realm Reborn. And it's... The event, It's simple, and it's easy and short, but it's always... I always look forward to it, because there's always some cute little story going on, and it always ends with you getting a one-on-one conversation with Yoshi P, which is always fun.
where he's more or less going, "Thank you for buying my video game. I really appreciate you're still playing this video game. Please continue enjoying and subscribing to my video game."
And I love he's always in the outfit that he picks for the expansion. Because with Stormblood, he at FanFest, if you ever there's it's always the Japanese FanFest, I believe, he will come out in a costume of like the new job. And so for Stormblood, he had the samurai outfit. So last year for The Rising, when he met you, he came out in the samurai outfit in the game. And then this year, he wore the Gunbreaker outfit, mostly Thancred's Gunbreaker outfit, at the Japanese Fan Fest. So at the end of The Rising this year, he comes out with the Gunbreaker outfit. So you know it's him, and it's just so cool. I always look forward to that.
And most importantly, when you finish the storyline, you can talk to 1.0 looking Menphelia to buy all the good, really good fireworks.
I always, always look forward to seeing her because, man, I've always had a soft spot for Menphelia. I know a lot of people, you know, you love her or hate her, but I was so proud of myself for picking up that it was her the first time we did The Rising because no one in our FC had realized it. And like, I'm standing there and I was looking at her and I went, "Hey guys, this looks like Menphelia." And they were like, "Oh my god, what?" So that's always entertaining.
Well, okay, so I now have to correct history here. Because I think I was one that pointed out to you, not because I realized it at first, it was because I was reading someone's Let's Play. Like, someone had done, like, a screenshot text version of 1.0. Because that's how, like, the original Let's Plays were. And I was reading a thing and it had a screenshot of 1.0 Menphelia as they were talking to her. And I just happened to have two monitors going and I was staring at the Rising vendor and I paused and went, wait.
Does she not look like ARR Menphelia? How much? Like, I played it and I do remember talking to the vendor, but it didn't ring a bell.
She wears, her outfit is not nearly as unique in 1.0.
Like, okay.
She's wearing a much more basic shirt. Like, if you go to the Rising vendor, the outfit that she's wearing was what Menphelia wore in 1.0. In 2.0, she has a much fancier outfit that has, you know, the boob window and whatnot.
No, it's a butt window.
Butt window, that's right. The butt window. So, yeah. The Rising, it's cute, it's fun. It won't take you but like an hour or two just to read through the cutscenes, but it's worth it. Every time.
An hour or two? It took you like 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty quick. And it, like, they have a neat little mini game in this one.
Oh yeah. They do the, I love this because they've done this, I believe, not every year, but most every year, where you do get a new little mini game to play with in the toy box that's in our FC house. And I was actually looking at Twitter and someone posted, it's a lot harder when you go do it from the toy chest. The pieces are a lot smaller and not as easy as it was during the event. So it makes it worth it. And because wasn't it The Rising a few years ago where you got to do the like GM dungeon game? That one was fun.
Yeah, like, I think so. It was like a weird like wizardry wannabe like sort of thing.
Yeah, it reminded me of like that Windows screensaver.
But if you're ready. That. Sorry, what was that, Dylan?
Said I don't remember that. I think the only one I remember is the one where you're literally finding fates to kill bugs.
Last year was the one where they had fates. They were pretty much recreating the end of 1.0 where monsters were showing up in Uldah.
Yeah, because when 1.0 was ending, they were just going crazy with it. They were just throwing monsters everywhere and watching all the characters who are now overleveled for these things, just trashing them, just filling it up again and again just to throw everything they could at everyone till they eventually just shut down the servers and played the movie to get everyone excited for A Realm Reborn. They do such a good job of always coming back to that moment, and every time they do it, it's still awesome. It's
oh yeah, like I cry when I go to one of the three city states and Answers starts playing. Like, it's I love The Rising. Like I said, it's a very short, it's a very simple event, but it just has so much behind it, like meaning behind it, that for someone that's played the game for so long, even because I didn't play 1.0, but it still has such meaning behind it for me. And so for the people that I know that did play 1.0 that were even there for the end of it, I know it has to mean so much to them.
But if you're ready to cry in Fates, worry not, adventurers. The Yokai Watch event is back.
It's not that bad anymore. No, which actually makes me want to cry for the... I did it the very first time it was out.
I remember doing it, getting a couple of the minions, and then one of the... maybe one or two of the weapons. And I do remember it being really complicated or really time-consuming. Today, I played for a couple hours and ground out the rest of the minions, I think.
Yeah, like, so this event first came out 5 years ago. And when it first came out, it took us... I believe I was the first one in the FC to get all 13 of the mounted weapons and minions. It took a good 2 months. Like, this was the event, because it was just A Realm Reborn at that time. And I believe this was the event where I decided, okay, I'll just start leveling every class, because I got 8 classes to level 40 doing those fates, because they were in those, that was the area of zones that they were in. So and at the time the cap was level 50. So I got 8 classes to level 40, and I got all the, you know, you had to get 28 to 30 legendary medals, and the drop rate wasn't near as good. So it took so long and so many fates to even attempt to get there. And it was hard. Like, it was really hard. A lot of people didn't get the second mount out of that. And so then it came out, I believe, last year. And they had made it a little easier, so I know people did it. And more people got all the, both mounts and everything. And then this time, it took me, I think, 3 hours to get the 4 weapons and minions to get the last mount that I needed.
And like you were saying, it is a good way to grind for experience. I was doing it in, I think, Western Lanasha, and there's like a low level area and a high level area, and I was just switching between my Thaumaturge and Red Mage and going back and forth and picking up experience.
Yeah, I feel bad. This time around, a lot of people I know are having issues, because blue mages will show up, and blue mages can just demolish everything in their path. And so I know that that's made it a lot harder. I know a lot of people in our FC were like, how do you get credit? I'm not getting any credit. And, you know, because the first couple of days, everyone was doing it. And, you know, I told them, I said, look, find a preformed party. They are everywhere in Party Finder right now. Go as a tank or a healer. Generate as much aggro as you can, and you should be able to get gold easy. But they were having the worst time because blue mages were coming in and just destroying everything.
Yeah, I had that problem a couple of times where when I was on red mage, it takes a couple seconds to cast a spell. And, you know, if I'm fighting one of the small monsters, not like the boss monster fates, by the time I would get something off, it would be dead.
Yeah, that's why I always subscribe to Basil's theory of go as a healer, AoE heal everything, you'll get the aggro and you're good.
Yeah, I do the same thing with hunts, for hunt trains, because it's the same concept where you get credit as if it were fate. So therefore, the more enmity that you can build, the more credit you get for completing the fate and or hunt. So if you just go as a healer and just spam your AoE heals, especially if you're in a party, you're going to get it almost every time. For Yokai, because I've yet to really work on my Gunbreaker, I was just spamming the AoE thingy for Gunbreakers and then keeping my tank stance on. So therefore, I'm generating the most energy I can, even though I'm not the best tank there, so someone else is going to get it from me, because I had, I think it's Iron Will, whatever tank stance is, I would get the credit.
Yeah.
And if you're a DPS, my suggestion would be to For example, I would do this when I was a summoner and doing grinding up fates. I would actually just do my instant dot on every enemy I could, and I would go out of my way to try and target the enemies that have yet to be tapped.
Yeah, no, I tried to do that as much as possible. Like, I think my problem was I just picked two classes that were close to the level of the fate just to kind of maximize what I get out of it. And yeah, DPS is rough when you've got a lot of active people.
And honestly, I probably, like, this time around, if I was starting it from fresh, how I am now, like, I probably would do a Basil's thing where I just go with whatever would generate the most aggro. But like I said, when it first came out and I was first doing it, there weren't that many people playing. I mean, there weren't near the number of players there are now. So fate parties weren't as big. Like, you know, we could get a fate party together, but I did most of them by myself. And like, it was a great way to level back in the day. Like, it was, like I said, I got 8 classes to 40 just doing those fates, and I did them pretty much on my own. Sometimes would have Basil with me or any some other members of our FC. Sometimes I'd join a random party I found out doing fates. I'd be like, hey, do you have room? But other than that, yeah, I did a lot of them by myself. And I think, you know, now that it's been out for a week or two, I think now you could probably level better with them. And so, yeah, I would definitely suggest that, you know, if you want to use them to level, then yeah, start now, you know, most everybody that's done it is done.
And again, you have plenty of time to do Yo-Kai Watch. It's going to the release of patch 5.4. So that's months away. Just get yourself to level 15, get yourself a little DA, get your Yo-Kai Watch, go out to Fates, earn their Yo-Kai medals, buy all the minions, unequip your watch, because once you have all the minions, you don't need the Yo-Kai Watch on you anymore.
Had an FC member learn that the hard way.
We've had several FC members. We learned that the hard way.
I know we learned it the hard way, but I felt so bad because as one of our FC members was like, I have so many medals, I don't know what to do with them. And I was like, why don't you just take the Yo-Kai Watch off? You said you had all the minions, right? And he was like, wait, what? Yeah, to get the legendary medals, all you need is the minion out. As long as you have the correct minion out and you're in the correct area for that minion, you don't need the Yo-Kai Watch on. Yeah, Kyoko Star on Twitter is wonderful at making images, and they made one for this event that is so handy. It's exactly what I used. They make images for Fashion Report every week, and they're so great. They're so easy to understand and read. So yeah, we'll insert the image in the show notes.
All right, I think that's all the topics we planned on covering in this issue. So yeah, good job, like, everyone. We did it.
Yeah, it was a big patch, but it was a lot of spoilery. And well, I know one of the things, I don't want to say what it is because it's a spoiler, but in the new dungeon, make sure you go find the Easter egg before the last boss, before you kill everything. And sometimes it shows up, sometimes it does not. We learned that the hard way. But yeah, no, it was great patch. Love the events.
But in a month or two, we should also be getting the resistance weapon stuff.
Yes, the resistance weapons should be coming out within the month. Ishgard should be coming out soon, because I believe it was scheduled for 3 weeks after patch 5.3.
So that is more stuff to look forward to. And don't worry, even though we've sort of talked about the patch, there's plenty of topics we can talk about in Final Fantasy 14. So stick around and keep yourself subscribed to the Carbuckle Chronicle. So, again, I've been your host, Basil, along with Anna and Dylan. Thank y'all very much for chatting with me today. Our theme song was originally composed by DJ Inobito, which you can find him on Twitch, and he's got a website, and he streams and does all sorts of things. You can find him there. But Anna edited and rearranged and reborned our theme song to be all Final Fantasy-like. So you can find me on Twitter at It's Basil Time. You can find Anna on Twitter at
Angel Darkfire, but the dark has no A.
And you can find Dylan on Twitter at
Dylan Wolf.
And you, of course, find the Awesome Cast at Awesome Cast. The website's awesomecast.com. Anna's also a wonderful editor who will make everything sound good and amazing. Yay. And until then, I think we'll see y'all later.